Hello and welcome to Node Up. It is a very Node Black Friday show. Today I'm joined by Aaron Hammer.
Hello.
Ben Acker.
Howdy.
Wyatt Perrell.
Hello.
And Kevin Decker.
Hello.
And they are the Walmart Labs team behind NodeBF, the hashtag on Twitter. If you haven't gone through and read all the amazing tweets, you know, live tweets of that, be sure to check that out. So there's an exciting thing that's happening over the last, 6 months or so, where Walmart has become the new Voxer. And what I mean by that is, you know, for a long time, the service that was breaking Node in ways that no one else was seeing was Voxer, and you know, it really helped evolve Node Core. And now Aaron and the Walmart team has taken over that mantle and that responsibility, and has been breaking Node in new and interesting ways. So, really exciting to see the load and you know the traffic that's going through Node at Walmart, and it's really important for. You know, not only Walmart, but for the Node community in general. So, really excited to get the show on. Why don't I start by letting everybody introduce themselves? Aaron, you want to kick off with a quick who you are for those who don't know?
Sure, I'm the chief Node instigator at Walmart. I joined about 2 years ago with the sole goal at getting Walmart to switch over to Node. I'm the architect for our HappyJS framework, and yeah, just I'm the guy who says naughty things on stage,
and everyone enjoys it. Awesome, Wyatt.
Sure, I'm Wyatt. I live in Kansas City, and I work on Aaron's team and help with Happy and any Spumco related projects.
Awesome, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm Kevin. I'm in charge of the mobile web front-end teams and based out of Chicago myself.
Awesome. And Ben Acker.
Hey, I'm Ben. I'm up in and around Portland, Oregon, and I've been there about as long as Aaron and just doing stuff on a couple of different teams over the past 2 years.
So there's before we dive into the discussion around what happened with Node Black Friday, there's a really interesting thing to note about all those bios is that you guys are insanely distributed. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we really believe in remote. Not only we have two main offices in Portland and San Bruno, right outside San Francisco, but the mobile web team is all over the place. The our team is all over the place. And we actually we have one team member who lives in San Francisco. We kind of say you really shouldn't go to the office anymore. It's been great. It's been a really really great way of you know finding talent and also being really productive, not wasting time on commute and other silliness.
Yeah, I love not having to get in a vehicle and travel, you know, 2-3 hours a day. Those are 2-3 hours that I can do much other, you know, productive things, including, you know, just spending time with my family.
Yeah, and we have this is not even a full representation. We have team members in New York, in Minnesota. I'm in Santa Cruz Mountain, so we really are all over the place.
That's fantastic. It's exciting, and it's great to be able to pull in all the amazing talent that you have on your team. So before I get into what Black Friday is, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsors. Today, NodeUp is sponsored by AndYet, Modulus, and Clock. Let me tell you real quick about AndYet and all the amazing stuff that they're doing. So AndYet builds Node APIs and JavaScript SDKs for clients like AT&T, as well as building their own product, AndBang. Anbang is a service that offers real-time chat and task management for teams. You can use that on the web in IRC, or you can roll your own using their API. They are free during the private beta, and you can go check out Anbang at anbang.com. The API has both a RESTful API, and you know, since Anyet is renowned for their real-time development, they also have an API for Socket.io. They have been a leader in WebRTC, and you should check out their simple WebRTC library and use Talkie, their Talkie.io service. Use Talkie on Twitter. Has been an evolution of experimentation that they've been doing over the past year with WebRTC, really driving that forward. And you can't miss the security with Lyft security that they have and their leadership position in the Node security project. So yeah, lots of love for Anyet, and really appreciate all they do to support NodeUp and the Node community. So, Black Friday. Black Friday is important to Walmart, and why don't we set the stage here and get a better understanding of why Black Friday is such a big deal?
I think for any retailer over here, Black Friday weekend is kind of nuts and goes a little bit crazy. There's loads of traffic, both on foot and online. There's lots of there's going to be loads of spikes, loads of stuff going out at multiple times during the day, so that there's going to be lots of traffic. There's going to be multiple peaks throughout the day that you're going to have to prepare for. So overall, it's just it's a harrowing experience for everybody involved. I think both the all consumers and those providing stuff for consumption.
It really is. You know, it's not just important to Walmart. It's really one of the pillars of American economy, and it's really the busy shopping up here of the year. Most retailers do a big chunk of their annual revenues in the time between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and so if you're down for even a little bit of time, if you're unable to serve customers, then it has a major impact. First, because that, you know, if those people might not wait for you to fix it. They might just go to your competitor. But also, you know, it's an opportunity loss, and we can't afford any of that when traffic is soaring and shopping is really focused on 2.5 days between half of Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and then Cyber Monday.
And this year was particular in that Black Friday came particularly late, right?
Yeah, so everybody gets a week less to shop. All the retailers have been freaking out about it for the last 6 months. And I think next year is going to be similar. But yeah, for a lot of people, their mind is basically, they're counting the time between the two holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And the 1 week off is going to throw a lot of them off. So that's why basically this year, if you in this country, you've seen it's no longer Black Friday, it's like Black November or right. Black December, or everything is painted black because it's basically everyone is freaking out trying to kind of like, you know, get that lost week back.
Right on. So how has that gone for Walmart e-commerce? So let's define the scope of what we're talking about. You know, your team is primarily interested in mobile, and Node BF is that what part of the Walmart infrastructure are we dealing with at this point?
So our team specifically is all mobile. We serve all the mobile web experiences. That's what Kevin primarily working on. So if you go to mobile.walmart.com, you'll see the mobile website. We also have native clients on Android, iOS, different version for iOS. So our system is basically serving all those clients for the mobile customers.
Got it. How has that gone in the past? The past online experiences with Walmart.
So I mean, I think the key here is not necessarily comparison to past seasons, especially for mobile, but really just the insane growth we're seeing. You know, the report that came out from IBM, that he said that 31 or 32% of all Black Friday traffic came from mobile devices. We have seen a 53% share for mobile across Walmart Black Friday, which is pretty amazing. If you think about the Walmart profile is not, you know, we are on the low cost end of retail, and even with that, our customers are way more sophisticated than the national average, which is awesome. So really, what we're looking at is basically a doubling of traffic, a doubling of revenues year after year in terms of mobile share, and that is the scary part. So the fact that, you know, we survived last year really means nothing for this year, because, you know, that everything is doubling, everything is tripling. It's just the mobile share of the business is getting bigger and bigger.
So how did the Walmart Labs team get ready to make sure that this year, especially with all the constraints that we've seen that were in place, how did you get Node ready for this launch? So see, you guys were, this is Node's really big launch, right? Out in the public at Walmart.
Right, and we actually started pretty early on in the year, and that's probably why we found the memory leak so early. You know, we just started deploying out our Node servers and seeing how they handled traffic. And then we also did some stress tests as we got closer to Black Friday just to see if we can, you know, handle the anticipated load that we're expecting. And on top of that, we also made sure that we had appropriate monitors in place on all of our applications and the servers, so if there were any issues that we caught them early on, or even anticipated issues that we were able to predict that they were going to happen. So it's kind of a long process. We started early in the year, and that never really stops.
So what did you go through to help set up these tests? What were the phases of testing?
Well, so there's our own testing throughout the year, and really our Node, for those of you who don't know, our Node proxy servers are sitting between the mobile clients and our legacy Java services and some third-party services, and they're basically acting as a proxy. And the idea behind that is that it allows us to migrate services from Java or other providers to Node as we based on their value and based on our priorities. We don't have to go in and just rewrite the entire system from scratch and do a big swap, which is a very convenient model. But it also means that in order for this model to work, the proxy has to work really well and really be invisible, not add any latency. So a lot of the testing involved just ramping up the volume, trying different configuration of servers, you know, trying it out with only very few servers. When we launched this, we actually launched with, I believe we had something like 6 or 10 servers in 2 data centers, and that was driving 100% of the mobile traffic. I mean, that was, you know, back in April, May, but still, that was very few VMs driving all the mobile traffic. And so we learned a lot from trying out different configurations, different scales of deployment. And then the memory leak was really the main focus over the last few months. And that drove most of our testing, most of our monitoring, because that was the one thing that we were fearing is not going to work during Black Friday.
Okay, let's hold off on the memory leak for a second. I want to fill in a little piece of context that I'm not sure people realize. Now, Happy is known as, you know, general web framework, but it is Happy also powering this proxy?
So yeah, Happy basically our basic building block for anything we do in Node.
Okay,
and it has the proxy itself. By the way, is really Happy plus, like, I don't know, 20 lines of code, which we actually I tweeted like a little gist over Black Friday that actually gave pretty accurate cut and paste of what's running in production.
Well, so if other people wanted to build out a, you know, a similar proxy layer, you know, they could go to Happy and you know, find an example, you know, for a good proxy.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of examples there. I also point out that PayPal in their new framework, one of the components they have is their NPM proxy, and that's actually sitting on top of Happy. They use Happy to build that.
Right, and that's you know, there's this feature in Happy to be able to basically define a component in JSON, and it uses that to build it up. It's you know, quite interesting to see. So yeah, lots of great things coming with Happy, you know, new and different ways to be using it, and it, a lot of people coming to the Node community are used to the you know, your Django's, your Rails, and these very web centric frameworks, and you know, don't quite realize how network focused Node is, and it's great to see Happy also, you know, being such a, you know, core Node citizen, being, you know, much broader network framework. So I want to get into the leak. It was a fantastic story. But let me talk real quick about our sponsor, Modulus. Modulus is a PaaS service. They have integrated MongoDB hosting that ties in really nice performance statistics and, you know, leverages that tight integration to really be able to visualize, you know, that end-to-end data so you can see how things are performing. They offer in their PaaS free SSL, WebSocket support, and support nearly every Node version. You can sign up for Modulus, the PaaS service, at modulus.io. That's modulus.io. And use the promo code NODEUP1. It's one, the number one. So check them out. They are on Modulus on Twitter. A very exciting announcement at Node Summit. They now have an enterprise offering where you can take the PaaS service and, you know, do your own hosting for, you know, basically leverage the experience and the service that you get in you know, the Modulus PaaS service in your own data center. So, you know, Curvature is the offering around hosting that offers rapid development, easy scaling, and real-time analytics. And Flexion is the instrumentation around analytics. Check out enterprise.modulus.io for more information about that. Thank you, Modulus, for all the support. So, there was a leak, and no one believed Aaron. And we all thought it was back pressure, and that Aaron was wrong. Aaron, can you tell us about this leak?
I'm actually going to let Wyatt talk about the leak, because awesome. He's the guy who suffered mostly through it. I just pointed fingers and look at the chart.
Yeah, it started pretty early on whenever we got the proxy deployed out. You know, at first we had some crashes that we resolved, and then everything seemed to sort itself out except for some slight memory growth here and there. And I was one of the people who did not believe Aaron that it was a full-on leak.
I didn't either.
He spent a lot of time watching the graphs and charting them out, and it definitely ended up being a leak. And we were able to share some core dumps with Joyent, and TJ Fontaine at Joyent was able to then reproduce the issue, I guess, and he created a really sweet dtrace script that was able to kind of nail down where the leak was located at. And he got it deployed out and fixed in, 0.10.22. So that's what we had running on our servers, was .22. I don't know, Aaron, did I miss anything? That was kind of a high level.
I think the coolest part about this leak is that it was a 4-byte leak. that was only happening when you created certain stressful situation on the HTTP client. So you had to make a lot of small HTTP client calls in a particular load that will trigger it. But then what's really interesting is that after it was found, the number of people coming out and saying, that was my problem too, has been crazy. I just heard from the guys at YUI that one of their server has been suffering from that, and now their RSS charts are flat. And so there's been a few of those, but you know, everybody just assumed that something is wrong with their stuff, because if it wasn't, then everybody will have this problem. And it actually turned out that everybody had a lot of people had this problem, and like they just didn't want to believe that it was somewhere else.
Yeah, that shape of the graph is, you know, very, very familiar. So it's crazy to see that actually shift now. So what were you guys doing to make sure that Black Friday was, you know, going to be successful? You did a lot extensive testing to make sure you know, it wasn't, you know, Node wasn't going to fuck up.
We basically have over like 6 months been building, you know, a pretty intense monitoring system. We practiced, you know, rolling the servers, putting in place failover, using load balancers. So we really and for the longest time we really assumed that we're actually not going to even run this during Black Friday. So the freakout period was really just the last like 3 or 4 weeks, where we were like, oh, we're going to run this on Black Friday. So now we actually have to make sure it's ready for prime time. And it was really just a long journey of constantly stabilizing and improving what we were seeing, without fully knowing how prepared we were for quite this much traffic all at once.
Because, you know, it's, you know, probably pretty hard to stage something like that, right?
Yeah, I like saying that Walmart is too big to stage. And part of the challenge in, for example, reproducing the memory leak was that for the longest time, we could not reproduce it outside. We needed that particular environment to trigger it in terms of the usage patterns, the hostile services, both downstream and upstream, just that nature of real massive mobile traffic that it's very hard to simulate at scale outside of production.
That's what I was going to say, is that even all the tests that we did ahead of time, were none of them came close to the traffic we were actually able to see. And it also took a lot of time, like, determining how we were going to get stuff set up, because we've got monitoring systems across loads of different platforms. You know, Aaron's mentioned Splunk in the past, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that feeds into Splunk. We've also got some Graphite stuff going on, and we've got in one of our systems, we've got a whole bunch of monitors that are providing information on all of the system resources for one entire system, which was ridiculously useful in pointing out some problems that we were having with certain elements of our analytics system, which we were able to react to and fix during the weekend.
So I've built large scale mobile deployments, but I don't know that everyone is familiar with the challenges that are involved in mobile clients. What are the you describe them as hostile clients. What does that mean?
You're trying to get me to give the quote from the state, right?
Not necessarily, but there were some choice moments.
Yeah, you have to look it up if you want to see what.
Right.
But it was a one-time. But really, mobile clients between latency, long connection, disconnects, just incomplete socket transaction. They're not very polite in terms of how TCP is being used, so you don't always get your heartbeat or your acknowledgement or the termination of the connection. And so it really creates quite a lot of stress on your servers, because they end up with quite a lot of crap that they have to maintain. And Node does a really great job doing it all for you, but it does take some time on the software side in your application to really fine-tune your app to deal with it. And that's a lot of the I think the smarts that we have in Happy is that it's doing all those things. It's basically accounting for all those edge cases where, you know, you're proxying, but then something goes wrong in the middle. So, you know, the connection terminates or closes or errors, or you get multiple of those at the same time, or you have, you know, the upstream closes on you, or like there's all those different things. Mm-hmm. And you end up with this insane state machine that has to handle all those different events that in most, you know, if you look at most people's applications, you know, they have like this one big, you know, error handler for everything, and they don't really care if what happened was a socket close or anything else. They just like, oh, it failed, okay, just ignore it. But you can't really do that in a more complex system, especially not in a proxy, because you're going to end up wasting a lot of resources if you don't terminate all the dependencies once something goes wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. With building the backend for a mobile service, there's a disproportionate amount of code around those paths. So, what works well in handling that? So it may be a little bit premature, but it's worth diving into. What has been effective in, you know, cleaning that stuff up? What are the, you know, do you have to go through an extensive audit of making sure you know all of the stuff that's there, so you're closing everything? How have you gone about doing that?
Most of that actually was done by Wyatt. I let him talk about that, but it was really just an exercise of dealing with stuff as it was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of it seemed to be a response to what we thought was the memory leak. We thought it was related to disconnects.
Right.
So as we tried to solve that problem, I added code then to track like the upstream requests and whenever the you know, mobile client disconnects, to make sure that all the upstream requests disconnect. So we do have to track all of that, or I guess pools for all those requests. Yeah, that's about it.
And so at this point, you have all that instrumented. Have you experimented with like reducing some of that code surface area and, you know, loosening that up? Or, you know, do you feel like you've potentially over-engineered there, that you could reduce some of that?
Well, that's the great thing with having Aaron on your team. He won't let it be over-engineered before it gets committed. So he does a good job of, you know, checking all the pull requests. And he probably did trim out a lot of extra over-engineering that I might have tried to add in. So it's pretty slim right now.
You can go and look at some of the Happy change log, and you'll see some unfortunate fixes by me trying to simplify some of this handling, and then only an hour later to have another version of Happy go into production where we put it right back in. So there's plenty. Basically, we kind of like said, oh, you know what? Like, why are we doing this? Why are we listening on this event? It doesn't look like it's something that we should be doing. And then as soon as we put it back into production, we're like, oh yeah, that's why that's there. And the way we handle that was immediately to go in and add more unit testing that will basically try to recreate that particular thing, so that next time somebody tried to remove a piece of code because it doesn't look like it's doing anything, some test will break and you can go and see what that test is doing and how what it's describing. So it's really been our approach that, you know, really relying heavily on our unit tests is a method of documenting why certain things are in place, not just as a way of testing, but also as a way of documenting the knowledge.
Awesome. Love it. Yeah, I think that's essential. And you know, often where I'll go look at a module before even diving into the docs. You know, what are the important things that a module developer are, you know, concerned with, and have they addressed in their tests? That's fantastic. So in this process, you also went through a complete analytics rewrite. Wyatt, do you want to talk about what went into getting ready on the analytics side?
Sure. Let's see. Last year, we actually did have Node running on Black Friday for our analytics server. And then this year, it just needed a lot of updating. It was running on an old version of Node and of Happy. So went in and, you know, took out some of the code that we could reuse and then just updated it to use the latest Happy version on Node 0.10. And then we also kind of re-architected it some. So we split it off into workers and collectors, and that made it a lot easier to kind of tell where our bottlenecks were and to scale out appropriately. So we had to end up doing that for workers, you know, as we had a lot more analytics traffic to process. We were able to scale that out and have more worker processes.
So for those who aren't familiar with the Happy ecosystem, you know, some of these things, when you're talking about Happy as one thing, it's not the, you know, Happy Core that's doing it. That, you know, Happy is designed to be, you know, plugin based and very extensible. What are we talking about when we're looking at the collecting and you know that analytics stuff?
Yeah, so for the – oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, why?
I was just going to say the collector just became a plugin, and a plugin for Happy, so it was then pretty easy to deploy out. It just became – the deploy itself became a config file pointing to that new plugin, and that was about it for the collector.
I think Wyatt is being a little modest here. So one of the things that the Neolithic system was trying to do is that we had a pretty solid solution before – that was done by Bradley Miller from our team, who is really good at you know, kind of like putting together really quick solutions. The challenge has been since last year in terms of growth is that it looked like we had to go to like a couple hundreds of servers just to keep up with the load with the architecture that we had in place, which was fine for last year, but wasn't really going to work this year. And that we had one web server that was getting all the requests, parsing all the payloads, parsing the JSON in the payloads, doing some schema validation on this data, and then passing it along to Mongo or Splunk or StatD or Omniture or whatever else the destination is. And so that was creating quite a lot of tension on the servers because they're doing all this in-memory processing. So it was heavy on CPU and heavy on memory. And the only way to handle, you know, basically the overload of data was to keep bringing more and more of these servers up. So you had no way of handling peak other than putting more capacity into your system for peak, which is very expensive for analytics because we had about 10x growth over Thursday of Thanksgiving, but that went down to like 3x on the rest of the time. So it was one day when we had insane amount more analytics coming in than the rest of the time. So to go and invest all this money in all these VMs just for that one day would be really wasteful. So we were looking for a way to, how do we scale this thing up? And then why spent a lot of time playing with different architectures and different solutions to create this queue architecture. And so I think that was really interesting, and some of the things we've learned about, you know, the comparison between saving to a queue, we end up using RabbitMQ as our queue.
Okay.
We try to use writing to the database directly. We try to write to files, and the queue was really the fastest, which really shows just how crazy fast Node is when it's doing just network stuff. If it's network in, network out, those processes that are receiving all the data really were doing absolutely nothing. They're just sitting there, low CPU, low memory, and they're just, you know, piping data in right back into the queues. And then we had the other process take the data from the queue. And if we, you know, if we're having too much data, we were just getting behind on the queue, but we were not losing data. And it allowed us, it basically bought us more time to get over the hump of the increased traffic until it was a little more quiet to catch up.
So why RabbitMQ?
It's actually wasn't something that that we looked at. It was other team in the other team that we work with who's building a much more customer facing critical system, and they have looked at multiple solutions. And of all the things that they looked at, that was the one that came up as the most likely queue that they're going to use. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, okay, we'll just use the same thing then, so that you know we keep it more consistent. And it did the job really well.
So. What about the there's a note about tracer for production?
One of the things, it's just one of the monitoring systems that we built. It was just something that would shoot through a just make a bazillion requests of all our external analytics collectors and make sure that we could trace stuff going all the way through to identify problems to see if, because ultimately this was our big test of the new analytics system also. We had a little bit during some of the load tests, but during Black Friday was the main time that we had it, and we wanted to have something more than the load test, so we created it's just something simple that you can do super easy in Node that we used to trace stuff going all the way through our analytics system to make sure stuff was all right. Kind of like a mining canary.
Okay. And now, is any of this open source, the collector and those things, are those plugins going to be open source at any point, or is that inside plumbing?
It's probably going to be a blog post rather than open source, just because there's not that much code there, and to abstract our internal logic, validating our own analytic schema and the stuff we do to make it compatible with some of the third-party vendor we use. I don't think that that's useful, and for us to abstract that away is just adding complexity where it's not necessary. But I think there's definitely going to be a blog post where we share a prototype example that's doing the same thing only without all the Walmart-specific logics. We'll definitely do that.
Awesome. That'd be fantastic. I'm sure many people are looking forward to that. So you had in your talk at Node Summit a really interesting quote that I loved. So in the one of the last testing phases, there was a moment where you'd taken Node out of the mix, and you were seeing that those back end Java processes were performing less well than with Node in the middle. Why is that?
So what Node was doing very, very well was acting as a sort of back pressure for the legacy services and was queuing things up. It was doing a better job at handling the volatile socket activity coming from the mobile clients and just offering, basically a little buffer. Load balancers, they're very good at spreading load, but they're not very good at being patient. And so if there's a little hiccup somewhere in the system, the load balancer will just basically reject all those requests immediately until everybody is up and ready. But putting Node in place was basically giving the Java service a little more breathing room, throttling some traffic for them without actually losing that traffic. So it did result in increased response times, but during Black Friday, people already are kind of immune against slow websites. Everybody knows that they're going to go on website, and everybody else will be hitting the reload, and it's going some of the deals will be slow to load. So it's a little more acceptable in terms of the customer expectation in the industry to be slightly slower. It's not good, but it's a little, people are more patient during that time than they are on a regular day. So that's really, I think, what Node was doing. We didn't get to fully investigate exactly why everything was looking so much better with Node in front. And we also noticed that we can reach higher page view rates and order rates when this is fully deployed. So yeah, I think it's mostly the queue behavior, which is also why it's dying whenever things are not doing well without some back pressure, because it will just become an infinite queue that at some point will run out of memory.
Yes, exactly. That can be the most disastrous thing. If everyone keeps rushing back, a real disastrous scenario. So before we dive into how things went day of, let me talk about our final sponsor today, Clock. So Clock is a digital development agency on the outskirts of London. They make beautiful websites and web-based applications. They're known for integrating legacy systems and devices and all the things that really don't want to be integrated. They are experts in publishing customer insight and bringing customer loyalty into the development experience. They have developed hardware devices for retailers that are put in stores. They have a 100% Node.js solution called SwipeStation. You can learn more about that at swipestation.co.uk. Been around since 1997. Been using Node since .4. And since then, fallen in love and try to use Node with everything that they do. Their clients include BBC, News Corp, Nielsen, Joyent, Eddie Izzard, Shortlist, and Hearst Media. They have a publishing platform that is used throughout Europe called Catfish, and a number of publishing companies using that. You can go and learn more about Clock at clock.co.uk. Be sure to follow Clock on Twitter at @clock and hit them up for a quote at hello@clock.co.uk. So, NodeBF, Black Friday happened. And what went down?
Not much.
What? All of this and like, no?
Yeah. I mean, we had it set up so that it seems to be kind of like everybody wants to have a big fire drill. There's loads and loads of people that have been begging for all kinds of coverage schedules and all different kinds of stuff. So we had one set up. We had a coverage schedule set up so that if anything happened, we would be ready. But we were all kind of excited about to see how it would perform. So we were all on anyway, just on a hangout, pretty much from Wednesday all the way through Saturday. Just taking a little bit of time to sleep here and there. But for the most part, it was listening to Aaron DJ to us through the hangout.
It was so boring. It was driving me nuts. But the thing is, it was like it was the edge of your seat, boring. so it's like you're bored, but at the same time your body is completely tensed. You're like you're waiting for something to blow up and nothing blows up, so it's this constant conflict in your own brain.
And to give you some kind of idea, before everything went down, we've been talking about this new analytics engine that I put together, and we have these Nagios alerts that'll hit us based on queue sizes, and we would get queue sizes of like, sometimes we'd get heavy traffic and we'd get in the hundreds of thousands for stuff, and then we made some changes to it so that it could handle more traffic. And I got a call at some time during those when I wasn't on the hangout, and it was Aaron, and I answered and I said, "What's up, man?" And he's like, "Ben, one of the queues is up to 16. We need to check this out." So, yeah,
could be dangerous.
I think it was like 100. Like, let's not get.
It probably was maybe like maybe 100 when he called, but it was down when I got on.
and the thing was, everybody threw out this whole thing was like everybody was like coming up with suggestions of how we can, without getting in trouble, how can we like unstable things just a little bit to make it interesting. I think Wyatt wanted to like move to Node 11.
Okay. Oh my god.
I liked your suggestion of reverting the memory leak fix. That was
yeah. I said let's just go to 10.21.
Uh huh. Right.
Yeah, we had a few, and we actually so we found a caching bug that we had to fix before Monday, so that certain promotions will, you know, would not have been visible otherwise. And everybody was like, "Hey, let's just wait until, like, you know, Sunday, where everything is quiet." And you know, Kerry and I looked at each other and were like, no, now. And we actually ended up doing a. We knew it was, you know, very, very zero. It was basically zero risk for us. So it wasn't like, you know, we were like being brave. But at the same time, it was like this psychological thing of we're gonna do a release in the middle of Black Friday, just because. And it was, you know, it took like a few minutes. It was like completely uneventful. Worked exactly as everything was rehearsed before. It was really great. It just showed how, you know, what you can do. You know, even through your busiest day, when you have a good foundation and a solid team behind it, then, you know, you're not really taking risks. You're just doing what you've been preparing for.
So, you know, speaking of team, there, if you have a constantly on situation, I'm sure being remote is actually beneficial for being able to, you know, sort of loop in and out, but still have, you know, some contact with reality.
I think the culture of remote basically moves away the culture of 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. It's basically because everybody is managing their own time and they're working at crazy hours that work for their life. You know, like if you look at my GitHub activity, you'll see, like, you know, I'm very active between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. So it really enhances this kind of behavior, because when you have this, you never have to apologize for asking someone to, you know, work at crazy hours or put more time in, because everybody knows that basically, well, you know, they'll balance it at some point. You know, it will all even out. We don't need to say, oh, you're gonna work, you know, four more shifts today, and then, you know, you'll take next week off to compensate. Like, we don't have to play those accounting games that most other companies have to play, and it's. And the thing was, during Black Friday itself, like, most of us were up all night, and we only had, you know, two people, like, listed down as responsible, but it was just so much fun. You know, like, we were just having a good time. It was like this team building exercise of, we're all on Hangout, all talking. It's I think remote is the future. It's just, you know, it takes time for people to understand that and embrace it fully.
Awesome. And build, you know, build the trust, right? You know, having home runs like NodeBF is a great way to sort of not only move Node forward, but also, you know, be a really a positive indicator of what a remote team can accomplish and you know, how it's beneficial. So I know you're dying to share some numbers, Aaron. You know, what can you share in terms of details about what happened on Black Friday?
Actually, that's like one of the few things that we can really share. We were able to kind of like push the boundaries on what is what's acceptable sharing for the, you know, for the company on public, especially live. And but you know, like the numbers part in terms of revenues and volume and number of users, unfortunately, those are all you know, SEC regulated piece of information that we kind of have to wait a little longer. We'll be able to share all of this stuff more as soon as the quality reports are out.
Awesome.
But basically, what I can share is that we have seen doubling and tripling of volumes. We have seen a very obvious migration away from desktop to mobile.
Mm-hmm. There's a number there, right? The
53%.
53%, yeah. Right?
53%. That's a number that was put in a press release, so we can talk about that. But yeah, it's just been, you know, the variety of devices we're seeing is significantly greater. Right. We're looking at, people are more serious about buying online and buying on mobile than before. You know, if the pattern in previous years has been a lot more in, like, you know, looking up the store or looking up store inventory or just bringing up the coupons or the local ads for the stores, A lot of that has moved to actually making the transaction and the purchase on the mobile device, which is really great for us, because you know that's what we got, that's what we do. You know, right. we have this hybrid experience, and through most of the year, our focus is actually not so much on mobile e-commerce, but more on the hybrid in-store experience, like you know, self-checkout where you can scan items on your phone and you can basically pay on your phone and leave the store without going to a cashier line. So that's more of the non-Black Friday focus for the mobile group. But then you know, Black Friday is its own, you know, its own beast.
Right on. So what are you using Node for specifically?
Oh, it's all over the place. I mean, I just today found out a new place where Node is being used at Walmart that I didn't know. So we're using it for the mobile API proxy, which is the main piece of machinery that we were talking about during Black Friday.
Right on.
We're using it for the entire analytics system. So the servers that receive the analytics data, that process it, and then forward it on to its destination.
Which is
we're using it. Well, Splunk is one of them. We use Splunk, we use Amateur, we use StatD, we use MongoDB. We have our own secondary baked reporting system that has been built in-house. That's pretty awesome. And we're actually really excited about the Voxer analytics system that Matt has promised to open source any minute now.
Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to send Matt a message on Twitter expressing how excited they are to see that. It's some of the great you know, having used that, it's really great.
It's magic. I went there and I was drooling when he was showing me, and we spent like 2 hours at the office playing at the Voxer office playing with that system and like digging into stuff. And of course, you know, Matt being Matt, like, you know, he goes and REPL into one of the servers that we don't understand what's going on, and we start playing around in live, you know, live code right there with live traffic. So it's great fun, and I think when Matt open sourced that, it will give some heartburn to a bunch of startups that are talking about doing some node operations and monitoring stuff. Like, they're looking at it like, oh crap. I think it will also give, you know, some Splunk use cases some, you know, run for their money. Like, it's awesome. It's really a fantastic homebrewed system that I think is going to make a huge difference in how Node ops are done. So I'm really excited about that.
Totally.
The other things we do with Node, so we have a whole bunch of internal toolings, and we also I learned that another team within Walmart, they're from the labs area, they do more of the social data mining activities.
Okay.
So their focus, for example, is like, you know, recommending you other products to look at, like relevant product that, you know, you're on one page and they say, hey, you might want to also look at these pages. That engine is actually being running on Node and on Happy, and it's live. It's been live through Black Friday. I didn't know that. And they also said like it was really boring. Their servers never went above 2% CPU. And we tweeted it today from the Happy JS account. There's a little picture. So if you go to the Walmart.com website and you go on the left side, you'll see like, you know, other related products, and that little panel is actually coming from Node. So it's really cool. Like, you know, people are doing it in other teams, and it's growing quite nicely organically within the company. But the other thing that's really cool for us is that we have recently moved our mobile web experience, which is still our biggest drivers of traffic and transactions. We moved that from being hosted on Java to Node, and we also built a pretty nifty A/B test framework into that Kevin can talk more about.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, over the past couple of weeks, Aaron and I were tackling how we can do A/B work, and our previous solutions just weren't going to scale for Black Friday. We actually, in years past, had to just turn them off completely. But through a variety of, I don't want to say interesting hacks, but smart use of data, we were able to do all this without any I/O, have it be completely self-contained, and you can actually run it on the client side if you want. It performed flawlessly on the Black Friday time period. We've open sourced all of it under the Spumco project. Confidence is the name of it.
Confidence, okay.
Yep.
Make sure to get that in the show notes.
Yeah, we're also going to be posting a blog post about this on the Walmart Labs blog in the not-too-distant future.
We're just waiting for the machinery of PR to put it up there. But it was really one of those, like, you know, fun moments where Kerry and I over, like, IM have been, like, saying, well, we can't put it there, and we can't put it there, and we can't put it there. Because everything will break something that's already being used, and at some point came and was like, well, we already have this, you know, random UUID that we use. Why can't we just use that as our random data set for the distribution? So we started looking at that, and we actually found a pretty clever solution that was actually the idea for that came from Adam Barth, who is actually one of the leads on the Blink engine at Google.
Nice.
He's my to go crypto guy whenever I have anything related to crypto. So that's a really cool hack. The way it worked out with generating AB evenly distributed numbers for tests without actually changing the footprint of our framework. Our team is actually moving into a no QA process where basically. It's still going to get QA, you know, by the virtue of us providing an API for mobile clients that are getting tested, and then, you know, they test our stuff as well. But that for the services layer itself, we feel pretty good that we actually don't really need much more than a bunch of automated smoke tests and integration tests that are basically run automatically whenever we do a build or push stuff. And we were able to really use, you know, between Travis, and the blanket node coverage module. So at this point, we have thousands of tests. I mean, our test to code ratio is crazy. And no one can commit any change if it doesn't pass the test. And one of the tests is 100% code coverage. So if you're making a change and you're basically not fully testing it, that's going to basically break it and it's not going to get merged. It also, by keeping it 100%, you can kind of keep that going. And you can really, really fast know if something has been, you know, new stuff has been thoroughly tested. What we've also done is anytime there's any problem or bug, the first thing we do is we add another test that will fail. Over the last 6 months, we have skipped that test, and every time that we did that, we paid for it. Like every time we said, "Oh, it's just a small bug; let's just fix it and go on," we had to do it like three times in a row until we got it right because we skipped the writing the test first. So, I the other thing that's worth mentioning is that we worked really hard within Happy to implement an injection functionality that allows you to really fully simulate a working server without actually starting a working server. And we use that extensively when we write all these tests, and we basically have, at this point, a larger collection of integration tests, part of the every module we write, along with all the unit tests. And we are learning to do more on the integration side and on the unit side, because they take less effort to maintain. You know, every time you change the internal implementation, something breaks on the unit side, which is annoying. But also, you know, you get that more thorough testing by doing that. And to enable all that, we used to use Mocha for a long time. But when Node .10 came out with domain support, Mocha wasn't really doing well with that. It was really just not handling that particular error handling scenario, and so we kind of forked off, and then we trimmed it down significantly, removed all the neat, you know, crazy functionality that Mocha provides, and we kind of just focused on our very narrow use case, and we came up with a module called Lab that we use now. It has all the, you know, built-in coverage and tooling we need for testing, and it's mostly compatible with Mocha. I mean, if you have Mocha tests, you can largely use that largely unchanged with Lab, but. Mm-hmm. our aim was not really to compete with Mocha or to replace it, but we just say, hey, you know, this is something that's very, very specific to our needs.
Right.
So yeah, that's such a general approach. I mean, we had a really great success with this, putting more and more of the testing burden on the engineers who are building it. And also, as a team, we basically require that any code change will get reviewed by one other team member. And there is no requirement of, like, you know, a manager has to review, or like, we have none of that crap. We just need to make sure that at least one more person looked at it. And we have this this constant, you know, challenge that, you know, started by me by being really mean to people when I do code review, that now everybody's trying to kind of, like, you know, it's like a game where, like, if you find a comment to make about someone's pull request, you know, it's showing off a little bit, but it's a healthy showing off. And, you know, like, Wyatt's favorite pastime is to do code reviews on my changes. And, you know, he always finds something. Doesn't matter how small it is, he always finds something just to kind of stick it back.
Nice. So, you know, just trying to encourage people to get beyond liquid to me.
It became a game within the team to kind of, like, showing how smart you are by basically finding little things to nitpick, which is great, which is really good. It keeps everything on their toes, you know, challenging. But also because we're all doing it to each other, it doesn't create, you know, anyone, you know, being upset by it or feeling stupid. Like, we're all stupid, right? Like if you're writing code, you're going to write bugs. You're writing code, you're all the time not going to be able to see the abstraction you can do or the simplification you can do. And a fresh, you know, pair of eyes is really, really important. So that has been a really good process for us, and really, like, the quality has been great. And the other thing that has been really, really fantastic is the recent uptick in happy adoption. The community is really, really awesome, and we don't even care if people don't do pull requests. You know, just reporting bugs, and the quality of the reports we're getting is so great. People put, you know, code to reproduce it. They're engaging. You know, they don't just, like, report a bug and then leave. And so that has really been a significant factor, especially since our own use of our own framework is behind some other people. We're not right. using, you know, all the features that other people are using, and it's, you know, whenever we have to use them, they're already being battle tested by someone else for a year. So it really makes our life much better, because then we can go to production so much faster with a brand new feature that hasn't been you know, tested or we got as much traffic, but then, you know, somebody else said it in their production, which is really the beauty of open source.
Excellent. I have a couple questions from NodeUp IRC channel. I want to get them in, kind of riffs on testing. SETI asks, what did you do in terms of security testing your node stuff?
So We have, and Wyatt has some security background. I have some questionable security background. And
you know better than that.
But really, like, our approach has been, in terms of security, is to just kind of follow the common sense, you know, best practices of security. We, you know, like, in coding, everything we echo back, and you know, always whenever there's an optional configuration of piece, to kind of, like, pick the stricter version as much as we can. I think we have a good mindset for it in the team. You know, so I we haven't, like, done anything, you know, specific just thinking about security. It's something that is more embedded in the process, that when we look at a piece of code, we kind of, like, ask ourselves, is this good? Is this not? And we also do a lot of, you know, research. Like, whenever we implemented, like, basic off support within that, you know, we went and we looked at this, some of the recommendation, and like, our first version of, like, basic off support allowed you to do, you know, plain text passwords or store the password in the clear. And we kind of, like, decided, like, you know what, we're not going to support that. We're going to make it really hard for you to do a poor implementation of the password store.
Excellent.
So I mean, you know, we're just keeping an eye on stuff. And for example, there was the recent report about the Express you know, file exploit that you can basically fill someone's disk. And we had the same thing. We were using a module that we were using a different module than Express.
Okay.
But the way we were using it basically created the same situation. So, you know, we keep an eye on everyone else's security issues in the community. And as soon as anybody reports anything, we immediately go and check if we're vulnerable as well and patch it. Some of our users have found in testing some ways of bringing down a happy server that were unintentional, and we fixed those. But yeah, and up until, you know, very recently, this wasn't a big deal because, you know, it wasn't really running in any significant production capacity. So we really had about a year and a half of just being able to solve problems without the pressure of, you know, oh, you know, need to keep this secret until everybody's upgrading and all that kind of stuff. But now we're moving into a little more restrained environment where, you know, we have some, you know, some customers at you know, Node Summit, MasterCard mentioned that they're using Happy. That's a big deal. I know Conde Nast is using it for some upcoming application that they're building for their magazines. You know, Walmart is using it in a big time. So, you know, it's no longer this toy we can play with, and so we are constantly reviewing how we're going to do it. And also, we have the internal security team within Walmart that constantly is trying to break into our servers in the background inside the VPN. And so whenever they find anything, they report to us, and then we go and see if that's something that's a framework issue or not. Yeah, so that's kind of the focus on security.
Excellent.
So it's part of the process. It's not something we do as a step.
Excellent. You have a team that has a lot of experience in that as well. So another question: How did you decide to do the whole? You know, how did the whole decision about doing the live tweet stream, the Node BF, basically? Who did that?
So that came out of a promise I made 2 years ago at Node Summer Camp, where basically I stood up and I tried to shame everybody in the community
for not
sharing any real data. And it was really funny. If you think about it, the only two points of data we had up until very, very recently is that, you know, 2 years ago, LinkedIn did something and they, you know, like they just said, oh, we went from this many servers to this many servers. But it was kind of like a really cool piece of data because, you know, got all excited about it. Here, somebody's doing something real, but at the same time, it was really meaningless if you think about it in terms of decision-making. And then, you know, everybody knew about Voxer, and nobody knew what Voxer was doing, but they knew it was doing something really big and great. So that was kind of useful. But at some point, that stopped being useful in terms of, you know, selling it to your boss, in terms of, you know, having faith in it, in terms of, you know, making sure your shareholders, your investors don't think you lost your mind. And so I kept saying, like, I will share as soon as I can share. And I felt that Black Friday was, like, the first opportunity for us to really, you know, put a spotlight on something. We felt good enough about it that you know, and I just felt like, you know, either it's going to be boring as hell and that's going to be impressive by itself, or stuff will break, but then, you know, we have such a great team that, you know, we'll be able to just pick it up and fix it on the fly, and so that, you know, we'll kick some ass. So we didn't get to kick some ass, but we got to broadcast the lack of, you know, news, which was great by itself. Now,
which is news, right?
I've been asked, like, since I've done it, I've been asked by a lot of people. They're all like, why would you even do it? Like, why would you, like, it sounds like something that's just a lot of work, but, you know, doesn't really give you any benefit. And I completely disagree.
That's all right. I think that
There is great value to the community, and then getting it back in basically highlighting what you've done, what worked well for you, getting feedback from other people about what they've done. But also, you know, let's face it, you know, just from the purely, you know, PR point of view, I think that, you know, just by doing that, we've really, in terms of, you know, showcasing what our team has done, you know, I think we've accomplished quite a lot, and you know, giving people the reward of being able to share that with the outside world, which is not something you get to do, you know, very often. You know, like hiring for a large company is hard. You know, a lot of people, you know, they're looking for the sexier, smaller companies. Even startups today can compete on pay and benefits. You know, it's no longer like, you know, just big companies can do that. And we're all engineers. You know, we all love to write code and create stuff. And as engineers, we want to talk about what we're doing. you know, as engineers, we want to share it with our friends and with the community, and we want to show off. Like, you know, what's wrong with showing off? And when you work in a little startup and you get to go and, you know, and do a talk about a little hack you just did this weekend, it's really cool. And it gets a little more complicated in a large company. So just setting that stage and basically saying to people, hey, you know what, you can do it. I mean, and it's not risky and it's not that complicated. And maybe another company will say, hey, you know, if Walmart can do it, do it too.
That's fantastic. There's another great question that I want to get into the podcast. Eric Toth over at PayPal asked about the monitoring that you were doing on the event loop. Can you explain a little bit more? You mentioned that at Node Summit.
So basically, the Achilles heel of any you know, central event loop system is that if the event loops start taking a long time, then everything gets starved. And you know, if you're not careful on how you're using next tick versus set immediate, you can very easily starve your application from ever getting to that to the next point. So, for example, let's say you're setting a timeout for 5 seconds. So, and then after you set the timeout, you are going and calling a function that takes 6 seconds to run. So it takes 6 seconds before that function returns control back to the event loop. What will happen is that your timeout will now take 6 seconds. And that wasn't what you wanted. Mm-hmm. Now, if you set multiple of these 6 second timeouts and each one of them takes, you know, 10 seconds, then at some point your event loop is going to get really, really behind, where you might get minutes behind. So one of the things that we've done is basically monitor how far behind we were getting. There's a module that Lloyd from Mozilla put called Too Busy, mm-hmm. which does it in using native C++ code. And it's a very neat little module. We have decided that we generally try to limit how much native C++ stuff we include. We just try to avoid it whenever we can. So instead, what we're doing is it's very simple. We're just setting, and you can look at the happy source code, and you can see it's right there. It's not a proprietary piece of code. It's right there in the framework. What we do is we just set a timeout. And we say hey, that timeout is for 1 second. And when the timeout comes back, we say, how long did it actually take? And usually it will take like 1 second and then, you know, 2 milliseconds. Mm-hmm. And then, so now we know that we're 2 milliseconds behind. Mm-hmm. And be careful. Don't use next tick, because next tick doesn't go through the,
go to the next tick, right?
It doesn't go to the bottom of the queue. You want to basically insert something all the way at the bottom of your event loop. You can really be able to measure it, and if you're doing any kind of back pressure, you absolutely have to monitor your delay. And again, like, all you have to do is somewhere in your application, if you're not using happy, well, first you should, but if you don't want to, just set a timeout somewhere, just set a reoccurring timeout, and every time it comes back, you just do a delta between when you set the timeout to when it fired, and then you deduct, of course, the timeout itself, and then you'll get your delay. And for most systems, if you're building a brand new system, if you're getting above, like, you know, 70, 100 milliseconds, something is wrong. Like, your software is not designed correctly. You're taking too long with some of your functions before you return. You're doing too much CPU stuff. For us, we're working with something really, really large number, because we have all those really slow upstream services. So we can, you know, 70 milliseconds, like, yeah, I wish. So actually, like, our timeout is measured in second, but even that is good enough to provide us with the back pressure we need.
Is that something you you know, line? Is that something that you do across the board on your services, or is that something that you tune per service?
Now it is. I mean, it's a brand new thing we added. We always thought about doing it, but because we were always we always had overcapacity. So we never, like, said, whatever. Like, I don't need to do back pressure. I'll just add more VMs. But Black Friday kind of, like, changed our tune on that. And because we, during the stress test, we saw how we're losing servers. Like, we have been, you know, losing servers because they just got too much load, ran out of memory. So we said, okay, we don't want to do that. And that's when we implemented the back pressure controls. And the event loop was the last thing we added, because sampling memory without paying attention to your event loop was clearly not enough, because at some point your sample rate gets so skewed that, that by the time you get to the next sample, it's been a minute and you already died.
Right. Okay. Well, that was fantastic. It's extraordinarily inspiring to, you know, see that evolution and, you know, have the story of 2 years ago, you know, really tie into what's happening now. And it's really great that you've taken the responsibility of that primary breaker of Node, and you know, also included that you're responsible to the Node community to sort of share that information. I as an individual, and I know everybody else in the Node community deeply appreciates it, and we appreciate the effort that's going into HappyJS as well. It's a great framework, and it really gets us ready for the growing, you know, enterprise business, whatever term you want to use, Node becoming a reality and a first choice in building applications for the network. So we have plugs before our upcoming events, just a few upcoming events. So please, do you want to lead off plugs, Aaron?
Sure. Of course, I'm going to plug our HappyJS framework. If you haven't, I challenge you to try it and tell us why you don't like it. And if you convince me, I'll buy you something. I'll buy you coffee. If you have a solid argument why it's why you don't like it versus Express or Restify or other successful frameworks, then I'll send you a Walmart gift card. But really, like, please try it out. You know, we've put 2 years of work into it. We're really proud of it. It's awesome, and we really want more people to use it, because the more people use it, the better it gets for everybody. I also want to plug in the scalenpm.org fundraiser. We reached our goal, but at the same time, it's never bad to have some cushion. And it's, you know, the campaign is still going on. And I do want to challenge. So our Walmart team, the company has contributed $40,000 to the campaign. No one has come close. And I do want to challenge, you know, all the big corporations that are basically all the big companies that have the multi-billion-dollar multinational that have been on stage at Node Summit. You know who you are, and I have not seen your name showing up on that list. And so, you know, for all you, $40,000 is the number to beat. But I also want to mention that from our own pockets, the Node developers. On my team, on Kevin's team, on other teams within Walmart Labs, have really stepped up, and we donated about $2,000 of our own money to this campaign, on top of the $40,000 that the company donated. So it's not just that, you know, we said, oh, you know, great, we got our employer to pay. We also we're all very passionate about it. We all love, you know, love NPM and Node so much that we felt very strong about it. So I really encourage you that if you haven't made a donation yet, go make anything. You really don't want to be that guy whose name is not on that list whenever when the campaign is done.
Fantastic. So, Wyatt?
Sure. I'm in Kansas City, and so I was just going to plug our local meetup, NodeKC. So if you're in Missouri or Kansas or Iowa or Arkansas, just come on up. We meet every month. All right, that's it.
Awesome. Kevin?
I wanted to plug the Thorax framework that we're using to actually power all of the front-end experiences here. That's at thoraxjs.org.
Awesome. Ben?
I wanted to throw a plug for Knode, which is a thing we've put together up at a PDX Node and with a whole bunch of Cascadia JS folks. It's a place to store information about the local meetup groups or different types of organization that you're doing for meetups or for NodeBots days or for any type of hack days. It's also putting together a whole bunch of information on about people who are willing to speak in different areas for or willing to travel and speak at these meetup groups. So check it out, github.com/KNODE.
That's fantastic. That's a really great resource. So my plug real quick, the Node Firm just completed our first online beta of performance analysis training with Trevor Norris. It really great. And we will have another one just scheduled the next iteration in January 8th. So head over to thenodefirm.com and you can get signed up for that. It should sell out here pretty soon, so don't linger too long. So, real quick, upcoming events, very high level, there aren't too many. JS Fest in March, be sure to get ready for that. DHTML Conf, tickets are selling out for that, so you want to get in there soon. In Melbourne, CampJS is back. March or April 2014, campjs.com. JS Comp is coming. Tickets will go on sale. Does anyone know the exact date? I think it's the 15th or 16th?
I think the 16th.
16th of December. They will sell out in seconds. Get your bots or whatever ready for that. We'll be back in Amelia Island, Florida again. It's a great family experience. I went there this year with my entire clan, and everybody loved it. And you know, it's nice to be there on the beach. So NodeConf is going to be July 4th this year, and it should be back at Walker Creek Ranch. So looking forward to that. Thank you so much, everybody. Please leave a review for us on iTunes. Even if you aren't using iTunes, it helps us get in front of people, and they can find us more easily on Apple's ranking things. So leave a review. Let us know what you think. Really appreciate it. Be sure to follow NodeUp on Twitter. And right now we're booked out on our sponsorship slots, but there should be some opening up in the future. So if you want to support NodeUp and the Node community, love to have you around. Aaron, Ben, Wyatt, Kevin, guys, really appreciate you guys sharing, you know, Node Black Friday, Node BF, and you know, Walmart being a really great steward in the Node community, and doing a lot of great work with HappyJS. So thank you so much, and it was great talking to you guys today.
Thanks
for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, man, it was great.